NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me just celebrated its 20th anniversary of helping us try to laugh at the news of the day and current events. And Peter Sagal has been its host through most of those years, guiding a panel of funny people through recurring segments like Not My Job and Bluff the Listener. But Sagal's new memoir of sorts, The Incomplete Book of Running, reveals things about him that most of us didn't know, and some of them aren't all that funny, including his experience at the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing and a midlife crisis that led to a divorce from his first wife. I spoke to Peter recently and started by asking whether his passion for long-distance running was part of trying to run away from something, namely his crumbling marriage, and whether it helped at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I had always thought that I started my sort of serious running career as a classic midlife crisis. That is, I was turning 40. People who turn 40 tend not to have believed that to be possible before they do it. And once they do it, they're kind of shocked that it was possible. And then we're all like, oh my God, I'm turning 40. I'm going to die. I need to do something quick. And I thought I'd run a marathon and then maybe I wouldn't die.
It's worked so far, right? Yeah.
It's worked so far. That, of course, led to a very unexpected career as a pretty decent amateur runner and some benefits of that and getting into Boston and becoming a columnist for Runner's World and all of that. But it wasn't really until I started not even writing the book but talking about the book that I realized that it is probably not a coincidence that my enthusiasm for running very long distances coincided with the declining years of my marriage. I mean, there is running and then there is running away, and I think I may have been doing both.
Well, it's such a personal story, and I was surprised with it. It's got your trademark humor, of course, and your great writing on top of that, but the idea that you were willing to reveal some things, even in somewhat subtle ways, I mean, how difficult was that to decide that as this person that millions of people think they know from the radio, you were going to tell them more about yourself?
Well, I mean, for one thing, it's impossible for me not to. To the extent that I've written prose my whole life, it's always been somewhat confessional. But it's also something I wanted to do because one of the things I've discovered is if you go through tough times, especially if you're outwardly successful, right? You're the kind of person who presents to the world as being very happy and very successful. Everything's going great. You feel ashamed of it. You're like, oh my God, I mean, everybody thinks I'm doing great, but really things are not going well and things are really problematic. And you feel self-conscious about talking about it, and you feel like you've somehow let, you know, not only yourself down, but everybody else down for not living up to your own image. And it's an isolation that happens on top of whatever else is happening to you. So I kind of wanted to be honest about what I have gone through, as honest as I can be, given, you know, the privacy concerns for other people involved. And let other people know, you know, if your life is not going as well as you as expected it to, if you're looking at Facebook and seeing people's pictures of incredibly happy families and feeling bad because you can't do that right now, you're not alone, brother or sister or anybody. I mean, and I think that's a helpful message, or at least I hope it is.
One of the things I think is people get to a certain age, usually men, sorry to say if women are, did you feel like this was, okay, I'm just not getting what I need right now, or did you feel like the circumstances around you changed?
I think that, you know, you're right. It's mostly men, and I think that it's mostly men who have the classic midlife crisis, at least according to the cliche, you know, going out and buying a sports car or learning to jet ski or running a marathon. Although women do it too, of course. I've talked to many women who said, oh, I started running at 40 or 50 because I wanted to, you know, just change my life somehow. I think men deal with this because men are expected to be more ambitious. It's a cliche, but it's one we internalize. And therefore, men, I think, are far more likely to look at their lives as they approach midlife and find it wanting compared to what it was supposed to be, you know, when they were supposed to go out there and you know, crush the world and take over and be a superstar. And so many of us look around and go, well, it didn't really work out. And then you begin to feel like, oh, my God, I got to start something else. Quick, you know. But you asked me if I changed. Yeah, I changed profoundly, not only through my running career but also through my sort of domestic difficulties and my divorce and the breakup of my family. There are a couple things. First of all, like I said, I think running, like I say at some length in the book, I think running gave me a sense of discipline and patience and what I call the practice of persistence, an ability to put up with stuff with more resolution and calm than I think I ever would have had before. I mean, as I say, you know, these things are not sprints but marathons, and I can do marathons. But I've also gone through a significant amount of changes because of, you know, the domestic events. And it's really changed my priority. One of the things I can tell you about is questioning that whole ambition aspect I was discussing a moment ago. I, like everybody else, was supposed to go out there and, you know, be a world beater. And when things went south, I started to wonder if I had been would have been much better off. Now, I take that back. I know I would have been much better off if I had been paying more attention to what was going on in my life at the moment than worrying constantly about where my life would be next.
I'm going to make the assumption that you are, because you're so intelligent, that you're a thinking person and you think a lot.
Overly much so. I wish
yes.
I could stop from time to time.
I'm not shocked by that. So for some, running and running it at great lengths gives them an opportunity to do even more thinking. Did that worry you at all, that it would give you a chance to think more?
No. As a matter of fact, I became, this is something else that I learned by the doing. When I started running seriously, I did what everybody pretty much does, which is I got myself headphones and listened to whatever, you know, whatever the technology was that was available back in 2005. But I eventually grew away from that. And the reason I did it is because, contrary to what we all think, i.e., I don't want to spend too much time in my head, I don't want to be alone with my own thoughts, it's boring, it's tedious, we actually really need to do that. And I've discovered that the value of, one of the values of running is the meditative aspect of, like, just turning off all the noises that we, for reasons I guess psychologists will have to explain, constantly drown ourselves with. And I think it's really important to, like, shut it off for a second, to take the earphones out, to put the screen down. Just go outside and think.
In the course of doing Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me for all these years, certainly you have your home base in Chicago, but you go to other parts of the country. How has running affected how you feel about different parts of the country, different cities?
If it wasn't for running, I wouldn't have any feelings about it at all. I mean, the way it usually works is, you know, we'll fly to some city, say Phoenix, and we'll stay in a hotel. We'll get into the airport. We'll get off the airport. We'll get in a cab. We'll go to this hotel, which is probably a big chain hotel. It looks like just the other hotels in the chain. And then maybe we'll go out to dinner at some restaurant, which, whether chain or no, probably feels a lot like the other restaurants we might have been to. And then we go to the auditorium, where looks like other auditoriums, and we do our show, and then the next day we leave. So if I didn't go for a run, then I probably would never actually see where the hell I was. I remember, for example, I believe it was the last time we did our show in Phoenix, I got to meet and run with the great Lauren Fleshman, one of the great middle distance runners of our time. She happened to be in Phoenix. We went for a run out there in one of those beautiful wild areas you have east of downtown, and it was just great. And if it wasn't for that, like I said, I'd never have any idea where I am. I'm talking to you from Miami, where I am right now, and I'm gonna, as soon as we finish this call, I'm going to put on my shoes and run out and look at the ocean just to make sure it's still there.
Peter Sagal is the author of The Incomplete Book of Running and, of course, the host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You can hear it Saturday mornings at 11 here on KJZZ. Peter, thanks so much for the conversation. Really enjoyed it.
My pleasure, and hopefully we'll get out to Phoenix soon.